Beers with Chad.
Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here for Juggernaut Training Systems, bringing you another episode of Beers with Chad. Because it's been exceptionally hot here in Southern California, nothing more refreshing than the most delicious Moscow Mule, a little Kettle One vodka in there with Fever Tree ginger beer. If you have not tried Fever Tree, the ginger beer, tonic water, all that stuff, by far the best mixers that I've had, so definitely check those out. This week's episodes of The Jug Life were brought to you by Purple. Purple is engineering better cushioning materials to help you sleep better, to help you sit more comfortably. They sent me out a bunch of chair cushions, which they really hug the buns quite nicely. So you can check them out, get some free stuff from purple.com/juglife. If you haven't seen, this week is the release of Strength Development for Weightlifting by my boy Max Ada. Definitely worth checking out if you are a weightlifter or a weightlifting coach and you're trying to design more effective strength programs within the context of the bigger picture of becoming a better weightlifter, because it's not just having the biggest squat possible or having the biggest push press possible. It's how does your strength training, your technique, your speed qualities all work together to help you snatch and clean and jerk the most on the platform. As well as you can find a glute hypertrophy guide from Dr. Mike, one of our last hypertrophy guides. I think we have this and one more coming in that series, so make sure you go check that out. A strength history minute about Pat Casey. We continue our clean technique pillars series, and there's going to be another Jug Life highlight with Adam Nelson from last week's episode, which I feel is our best episode of all time. This week on The Jug Life, we have Tim Swords. Tim Swords is the coach of Team Houston Weightlifting, and arguably the most successful, the best weightlifting coach in all of America, in a very unique position in that he has produced youth, junior, and senior level lifters and put them on international teams. He's taken lifters from their youth career through juniors to seniors and seen them on international teams there, which is pretty rare thing. And what's even cooler is that's all happening from his two-car garage in League City, Texas. When we got the opportunity to visit Tim on our recent trip to Texas, he must have had about 12, 13 kids in that garage training on a very, very hot Houston evening. It was like 88 degrees, about 85% humidity, and they were in there just banging away from, 10, 12-year-old kids up to probably the most experienced athlete there, or oldest athlete there at the time with us was Preston Turner, who, side note, very cool crossover from powerlifting, where he benched 540, was a multiple-time USAPL champion and collegiate champion, and is now competing in weightlifting, just made his first 400-pound, 182-kilo clean and jerk not too long ago. And they're all training under one roof, and Tim had a great quote about the mutual respect it takes to be a part of Team Houston, that whether you're a 9-year-old kid learning how to snatch for your first time, or you're Sarah Robles, defending world champion and Olympic bronze medalist coached by Tim, that they're all in there, helping each other get better in whatever way they can, whether that's the 9-year-old cheering Sarah on as she goes through some heavy work, or it's Sarah helping the young athlete with their technique. They're all about helping each other out and the whole improving, and it was really cool to see. And one of the things that I really appreciated from our conversation with Tim, and we actually ended up spending probably 5 or 6 hours over at his house talking about all kind of weightlifting history and training and all sorts of stuff. And one of the things that didn't make it onto the podcast, and unfortunately it so often happens like this, that some of the best parts of the conversation happen off camera. We got to talk to him about some of the GPP work he does with his weightlifters, particularly these lifters who are coming in, 13, 14 years old and maybe have no training background. And that's such a tough thing and such a big part of, I think when you look at the Chinese system or Russian system, that they have this great GPP base, and it's a term that gets thrown around a lot. And in today's episode, I want to talk a little bit more about what that means. So, you know, GPP is general physical preparation. The way that Tim talked about addressing this with his young athletes, or really any new athlete, regardless of the age they can come in, was very frequent, basic training to prepare, you know, the muscles that are used in weightlifting and the joints, the way that they get used in the sport, to, you know, get them ready for a lot of hard training. And the things that they were doing to prepare themselves for that, and this was every session, so maybe up to six times a week they were doing this, were back raises or back hyperextensions, Z press, which is a seated overhead press. They were doing, you know, some kind of abdominal bracing exercises, like front and side planks. They were jumping every time. They were doing a lot of upright rows to get their traps and shoulders ready for it. And, you know, maybe a couple other things that I may be forgetting, but very basic exercises, you know, not done to failure, but done for pretty high volumes and done with great frequency, you know, four, five, six times a week. They were doing every single one of these exercises after they were doing their technical work and beginning to learn the progressions and technique of the snatch and clean and jerk. And that at its heart is really what GPP is going to be about. It's learning the technique of the sport and then putting along with that, you know, basic, progressively loaded exercises to prepare you for more hard training. And the question I think that's important to answer when discussing GPP is, how general is general physical preparation? And that is going to be determined so much by the phase of an athlete's career they're in, the phase of training that they may be in. So we can look at it in the very long term, like, you know, having a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old come into Team Houston weightlifting for the first time, where they may be, you know, 12 to 15 years away from the eventual peak of their career in weightlifting if all goes well as planned. But you could also have a GPP phase at the beginning of a quad, you know, for Sarah Robles, someone who's an Olympian and going to be, you know, striving to make the 2020 team as well. Her training right after the 2016 Olympics in Rio for the first half of 2017, or maybe even for all of 2017, could be considered GPP training. Or with even the context of an annual plan, as you have maybe a football player coming out of his season needing to go through a more general block, or a powerlifter coming off of a meet needing to go through a more general block of training. And it's that concept of adjusting how general to specific the training is that's really important to understand. Today I got to do quite a bit of GPP myself, looking a little bit more red than normal, because I have some backyard projects going on, and I definitely felt like I was doing GPP of a very general nature as I loaded and unloaded about 75 pound bags of pea gravel and spread them out in this project that's going on. And I think that kind of very general physical preparation, the manual labor type of general physical preparation, provides such a tremendous base, but it's going to be likely what is further away from the peak of the athlete's career. So, you know, if you had someone who was growing up doing a lot of manual labor jobs, they may have a great general base to then transition to, you know, weightlifting, powerlifting, strongman, whatever it is. Mike Burke, a really great strongman who had this very fast rise after no formal training into his 30s, but this long, you know, construction and contracting career, came in and was exceptional right off the bat. And I think a lot of that type of very general physical preparation, like what happens when you're doing manual labor and just living a very physical life, that kind of farm strength, is what made so many of the lifters of the 1970s so successful. People like Don Reinhout, John Cole, Bruce Wilhelm, John Cuck, you know, these names that are still up there in the top rankings for powerlifting. And it's hard, I think, for people to conceptualize. How could someone, 40, 50 years ago, with the changes in technology and what we know more about training and squat bars and deadlift bars and, maybe better pharmaceuticals and all this stuff and just more exposure to the sport and more competitors in it, how are these certain lifters still up there so much? And did they just train harder? Did they have better genetics? Yeah, maybe some of that is true, but I think something that gets overlooked a lot in that discussion is the value of that huge general base that people who are, someone who's in their 30s, 30s to 40 years old, in the 1970s, the way that they would have grown up in the, 20s, 30s, and 40s, 1920s, 1930s, 1940s, is undoubtedly they lived a more physical life. My mom grew up in a very, very small town, Effie, Minnesota. It's like 150 people in northern Minnesota, and grew up on a farm. And I remember watching my grandpa, who was in his 70s at the time, had Parkinson's disease, and as they were moving, getting ready to move off the farm, they were having this big auction, and I saw my dad and my uncle both kind of struggling to carry this outboard boat motor. And my grandpa, in his 70s and very sick at the time, kind of walks over and shoos them out of the way. And, Husafell carries this boat motor, 50, 60 yards to wherever it needed to be. And I think gave my dad and my uncle a look of like fucking city slickers, because he had that farm strength, the kind of thing that can only be developed by, a good amount of work day after day after day after day, and it just compounds on top of each other to develop, this unique type of strength, but also this huge general work capacity. And those lifters in the 70s, I don't know specifically if any of those guys grew up on farms or anything, but undoubtedly it was a more physical life, more manual labor type of stuff that they probably did growing up, and it, without a doubt, contributed to their great success as lifters. So for those of you watching or listening to this, how can you use this idea to help contribute to your success as a lifter, assuming that you don't have, a time machine to go back into a more rural day, or you don't live on a farm right now, you're not working the fields, or you don't have that option. I sometimes got, when I was playing high school football, got mad at my parents, like, you guys should have sent me to, as I began to understand this concept even then, like, you guys should have sent me to grandma and grandpa's house and I could have lived on the farm in the summers and gotten, strong as shit carrying hay bales around all the time. But that didn't happen. I was living a privileged, soft city life, and I'd get worn out doing manual labor like today, but I can lift the shitload out of some pieces of metal attached to a perfectly designed piece of metal. But how can we apply this idea? So we need to understand this spectrum of general to specific. So if we're to take all the exercises in the world, the exercise farthest over here is your competitive exercise. Let's say that it's powerlifting. The exercise farthest over here is what is least related to success in powerlifting, which would be like, endurance sports, marathon running, triathlon, that kind of stuff. The things that are way, way over here, they can be cut out. They will never serve a benefit to improving powerlifting result. So depending on, so maybe we've cut out all this stuff. So now we're looking at exercises from here over that could have some potential benefit to a powerlifter's career, depending on when they get applied. So the things way over here, are, and I'm apologies to the people just listening to this, but the exercises the furthest to the right on the spectrum are going to be, that last kind of sliver of it are going to be, the power lifts and their derivatives and different loading strategies of those. So first I want to talk about these ones maybe a bit more in the middle. And those things a bit more in the middle of this spectrum could be things like gymnastics, track and field based drills, so sprinting, jumping, throwing, gymnastics, derivatives, tumbling, bounding type of stuff, rings, kipping, coordination, all that sort of things that can be developed. those type of drills can be hugely beneficial to a powerlifter's career very far away from competition or in a very, very general phase. Most powerlifters aren't creating quadrennial plans, like four-year training plans. If you were going to, yes, that those sort of things could fit in the earliest phase of that, like the first 6 months of a four-year plan. You could see those kind of exercises having some real benefit. Or right after a meet, if you have some background in them already, yeah, you could probably spend a month, you know, two to four weeks doing that type of stuff. Again, assuming you have a background in it already. Otherwise, if you're, you know, a 275-pound class powerlifter and you're 30 years old, I wouldn't suggest that you just jump on a pair of rings or parallel bars and start trying to get in better shape through that, as it's more likely to lead to injury at that point. But if you're dealing with younger athletes, those kind of exercises are gonna lay an incredible base for whatever speed power sport they want to do in the future. So as we move past those exercises to things that are a little bit more specific, but not necessarily, you know, the highest correlation and highest transfer to powerlifting results, what are things that are more like strongman related exercises? Sled dragging and stuff like that would fall into this category as well. They can be very useful. They can help build general work capacity, but they are, the person who is the best sled dragger is not necessarily the best powerlifter. The person who is the best farmer's walker is not necessarily the best powerlifter. The person who is the best yoke walker or keg carrier or, sandbag over the shoulder loader is not necessarily the best powerlifter. But the person who has the ability to do those varied tasks and to do them for, a good amount of volume may be able to handle more powerlifting training, and that greater volume of powerlifting training can then help them become the better lifter. I think it's really important to note with these type of exercises, sled pulling or pushing, farmer's walks, front-loaded carries, yoke walks, sandbag or stone shouldering, that while all that stuff can be fun to do, the way that you approach it is another degree of general to specific that needs to be considered. If you're pushing, pushing and pulling the sled into this highly, highly lactic environment for your muscles, where your legs are cramping up and you're throwing up from lactic acid buildup and stuff, that's going to be further away from powerlifting or weightlifting energy systems that you need. So I'd suggest for you to avoid that kind of thing more. Developing some aerobic base with it in an alactic setting can be great. That can be achieved by doing a tempo type of interval, which is a concept from Charlie Francis, an incredible sprints coach. The way that I'd suggest doing that would be to push the prowler for maybe 20 to 50 yards at a brisk pace, like 60 to 75% of maximum speed, with a relatively light weight. So that push should take, no more than 15 seconds at the absolute maximum, probably something more like 7 to 8 seconds. You're gonna push it for that distance, maybe drop down, do 10 to 20 push-ups, maybe some abs or band pull-aparts, a light exercise, and then you can walk a little bit, maybe halfway down and back to where you came from, as a little bit of recovery to let your heart rate come down a bit, then push again. Doing that for two sets, three sets of 6 to 10 repeats like that, it will develop plenty of aerobic capacity and general work capacity for powerlifting without putting you in a detrimental state where it's actually gonna take away from your explosiveness and power qualities. So that kind of stuff is really good kind of middle general exercises to be done, right after powerlifting competitions. You can refer to another Beers with Chad where I talk about the very off season. And I'll try and remember to link that down in the info for more information on how to apply that kind of stuff and when to apply it. But it's not something that's gonna carry over so highly to powerlifting success that you need to be doing it into the last, you know, 8, 10, 12, even 16 weeks out from a meet. It's really not going to help that much anymore at that point. But beyond that, yeah, it can help develop a great work capacity, general work capacity that you can then convert into more special work capacity with the next phase of things. I'm sure some people are listening to that and thinking, well, what about the sled as a recovery tool? So the way that the sled is functioning as a recovery tool is to help, you know, promote blood flow. And yeah, blood flow is useful, you know, to recover. But if your legs are really sore from squatting, another way that you could promote blood flow into your legs to help promote recovery is by doing some light squats. In fact, that will get blood into the exact muscles you need for squatting. And it will also have the added benefit of allowing you to develop a little bit better technique as you go. So I would prefer to see athletes do some light training there rather than doing something like sled dragging or strapping an EMS unit on, which is also gonna help improve blood flow, but is gonna have no technical development to it. So then as we move to this most specific of general preparation, that's gonna be when you're doing, you know, the competitive exercises for less specific rep ranges or slightly less specific variations of the competitive exercise. So the most specific thing that a powerlifter can do is a 1 rep max squat, bench, and deadlift to the competition standard in their competition equipment. And every change we make from that is a degree of variation. So if 1 rep max is the most specific thing, 2 reps is less specific, 4 reps less specific, 6, 8, 10 all less specific than that. So you can develop a lot of, you know, relatively general work capacity, but still in our looking at our whole spectrum of exercises, pretty specific special work capacity by a hypertrophy phase, a high volume phase of training where you're doing sets of 8, 10, maybe even 12 reps in derivatives of the competition exercise. So understanding how all these things can be useful, when they can be useful, is really important. You know, so many ideas in powerlifting, people want to make them either or. What's more important, intensity or volume? What's more important, specificity or variation? All of them are important, but when you apply them and applying them strategically and sequentially is maybe the most important thing about all of that. So hopefully that informed you a little bit better about how to use GPP as part of your bigger program, how G it needs to be, how G, the G in your PP needs to be, and gives you a little bit better understanding there. This was another episode of Beers with Chad. Thanks for listening or watching. I'm going to try and do as many of these on video as I can. Make sure you go check out Max's new book, Strength Development for Weightlifting. Got a lot of really great information in there. Again, it's not just about having the biggest back squat or biggest push press possible. It's about using those exercises to help you snatch and clean and jerk more. And trust me, there's a big difference between those two things. Sign up for the Performance Summit. Myself, Max, Dr. Quinn, Dr. Mike, and Dr. James, August 19th on Long Island. You can get some CEUs for the NSCA, still space remaining in what is sure to be an information-packed day. If you're interested in online coaching, juggernautcoaching.com can give you all that info. Whether you're a beginner, advanced athlete, anything in between, we have a program that's right for you in powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, and power building. Subscribe to the Juggernaut YouTube channel. Just over 200,000 subscribers. Pretty cool. Thank you and cheers to all 200,000 of you subscribers. This was Beers with Chad. Thanks for watching. Have a great week.